Afternoon, all. Thank you. Thanks, Phil. We wonder about the impact we have on people. If we do good, there's a blessing for us, for them. If we mess up, the result leaves a lot to be desired, and sometimes it can't be fixed. Sometimes we can't fix it. Thankfully, we're not on our own, thinking of words, thinking of actions, thinking of how to deal with certain situations and difficulties and challenges. We're children of God, and He has so much to do with the lives we're in. So much to do with the lives we're living. In every relationship, we make contributions to the other person. The Bible refers to this as sowing seeds in people's lives. God sows seeds in our lives, into the lives of others through us. And God tells us that Satan is busy sowing seeds too, as Doug's just eloquently described to us. Not good seed, but weeds, thistles, thorns, things that choke out the good seed from growing, perhaps sometimes from growing at all. But Satan doesn't storm in and use brute force. It's about stealth. It's about deception. It's about trickery and cunning. And his seed can look a lot like God's good seed. And he actually has people thinking that they're doing good, when really they're doing the exact opposite of good. They're deceived. They're tricked into thinking what they're doing is God's will. Wars have been fought in the name of God. Satan is the master of deception, and he wants us to believe we're doing right when we're really living contrary to God's wishes and directions and purposes for us. And that's us, that's the children of God, can be deceived too, can be misled, can be mistaken. So it falls to us to stay close to God and to rely on his wisdom, his love, his insight into our lives, into the purposes that he's called us to live for. To rely on his patience and his grace as we grow and as we plant seed in other people's lives. Through John, Jesus admonishes us, even as I can do nothing of the Father. From John 5:19. And later in verse 30 he says, I can do nothing from my own initiative. This is Jesus, the living Son of God, giving deference to the Father's directions and purposes in his life. And further on, he explains how it works for us. John 15:5, apart from me, you can do nothing. It's very basic and simple and straightforward, isn't it? Apart from me, you can do nothing. And he says, abide in the vine. We know that Jesus is that vine, and we abide in him just as he abides in his Father, to draw all that he has need for, just as we need to draw all that we have need for through him. So while we're connected to the vine, we must be receiving something. Not just a help, not just a tonic or a fertilizer, not just a stimulant, but something vital to our purpose for living, for actually existing in the first place. Something critical to our new life in him. Without being connected to that vine, that new life doesn't exist, because we can do nothing apart from him. We're receiving God himself, that which makes us spiritually alive, while others are still dead, awaiting for that union with Christ that we have and cherish. But it's more than some generic godliness. The life that God puts into us is specifically designed and tailored for each of us. We're all so different, and God works with us in different ways. And he gives us something that enables our growth, our development, our maturity, our understanding to prosper and grow. As individuals, but collectively as a body too. When God sows seeds into our lives, how do we know what he's planting? How do we know what's going on there? How do we know what he's up to? How do we hear the words that he's speaking to us? How do we pay attention in those moments when he really wants to grab our attention and make us focus on something or someone or something? God operates in Kairos time. When he does something, it's the perfect moment. It's a prime opportunity to accomplish some part of his will. And it can be fleeting. If we don't take it, it's gone. Sometimes gone forever. We operate in Chronos time, where everything's logical and sequential, structured, organised, predictable. If we try and scram a Kairos moment into Chronos time, if we try and squeeze a God moment into our physical, earthly life, it will be next to useless. If we put off something God gives us to do now, for next week, it'll be useless or diminished in its potential as God intended. If we're not paying attention, we'll very easily miss these Kairos moments that God plants in our lives to enrich us and through us to impact others too and enrich them in ways that I suggest only he fully grasps. Sometimes it's not for us to understand, but to go forward in faith, realising what God's accomplishing in us, not fully seeing the big picture just yet. These moments, these opportunities, these gifts from God in Kairos time may be something for us to do. It could be something to rest or to enjoy a moment before it passes. It could be to encourage, you know, a pat on the back, a hug, a smile, a catching of the eye, a high five. I've been enjoying my time with my mentor boy. I'll call him Monaro because we can't use his real name. Monaro, what a great name for a kid. Monaro Goodsy. There was a lady who was giving birth to twins. And in the particular country she was in, the father had to name the children, but for some reason he was detained from the birth and he wasn't there until a few hours later. And so his brother turned up in his stead. And a few hours later, the father rang up to the wife to see how it had all gone, and she said that your brother had turned up and he's named the children for us. And he was beside himself because his brother was a bit of a practical joker. Oh, no, he said, what's he called them? He says, well, it's okay. He's called our daughter Denise. And you could hear over the phone a big sigh of relief. And yes, our son, what's he called our son? De-nephew. So anyway, I've been teaching my Monaro some variations on the game of drafts. And he beat me twice this week and we gave each other a double high five, which apparently, according to Brianna, isn't called a high ten. But we just had an outrageous time this week. It was fantastic. He's been trying to beat me at chess too, but not succeeded yet. But these opportunities are made to be spent. We can't save them up. God makes them for right now. Specially tailored just for you. Just for me. And they're going to benefit us and benefit those that experience the result of our actions. Just like our late friend Barry. We shared his difficulties. We encouraged, we cared. Some of us endured his football stories. But we benefited by growing understanding and grace and maturity by our experiences with Barry, by our friendship with Barry. But these Kairos moments can be so easily crowded out by the other things going on, by the cares, by the distractions of the world. When God opens the window of opportunity, it can be open for just a moment. Recently I asked someone for the phone number for Rob Liminger. I wanted to give him a call. Say hi. I don't know what that call might have yielded, what fruit it might have borne. I don't know what the result of that call might have been, but I never made that call. I do know that moment is gone forever. And the fruit that could have came is also gone forever. I didn't seize that moment. I didn't seize it. But I don't believe God just gives us a moment here and a moment there. He's fully involved in who we are. The shelf of Kairos moments is jam-packed with opportunities, overloaded with treasures waiting for us to purchase them and then live them out. So we need to be sure where our focus is, or we'll never even see them, let alone delight in them by inhabiting them and becoming part of them and making them a part of who we are. Paul in Ephesians 5 talks about not being part of the world. And he contrasts the way of the world with the way of God. He explores the stark differences between the two, between light and dark, between greed and generosity, truth and lies, carnality and purity. And then in verse 24, we get this. Awake, sleeper. Awake, sleeper. We should have an exclamation mark after that. Arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Be careful how you walk. Not as unwise men, but as wise. Making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Spiritually dead people. He's talking about arising from the dead. He's talking to the church here. He's talking to the Ephesian church. He's telling them to wake up. To not be dead, but to be alive with the Spirit of God. We are the people who have to have life in us, because it's God life dwelling in us. And the light that he refers to, that Christ will shine on us. Christ isn't like a torch with a beam of light. His light is all encompassing. The world is filled with the people who see the light of Jesus Christ. It's filled with light. Not just a beam here or a beam there, but light that encompasses us, floods us. If we're not looking into the light of Jesus Christ, if we're turning away, all we've got is a shadow, and we walk in darkness again. He's saying, be careful how we walk. Be wise. Unwise people, or even us, God's people, who make unwise decisions and pursue unwise goals. That's who Paul's referring to. Be wise. Don't be unwise as the world is unwise. God says the wisdom of the world is foolishness. If we pursue worldly wisdom, we're doing exactly what Paul says not to do, to be wise with the wisdom of God, not the wisdom of the world. We must be close to him to understand what his wisdom is for us, to be able to see, to be able to recognise the special moments that he makes for us, the moments that he wants us to grasp with both hands, to seize, and then to spend on what he intended. We say, we understand God is our provider, but not just of physical things, but of spiritual things like time. Kairos time, special time, opportune time. Our life can be filled with the moments that God provides for us if we're able to see, through his wisdom, through his discernment, the things that he provides for us. God, we know that God tells us to ask for wisdom, to ask for discernment, to ask for understanding so that we can walk carefully. Walking with unwisdom, we don't know where we're going or why we're going there. It's all a bit random. Nothing random about God. His wisdom is there for us to live in and to share with others through the way that we walk, through the way that we live. I've always loved a message that Bill Robbie gave. It must be 20 or so years ago. He gave a short message on wisdom. And his punchline was, wisdom is seeing the end of a matter. I just love that concept of being able to think through a situation, to see what it might finish up at, and then to take the steps to recognise what that end result is and how to get there. Wisdom is seeing the end of a matter. That's the wisdom of God, to see the matter in the way that he designed it. We look forward to the kingdom to see how that's going to finish up and look and take the steps necessary to get there. Making the most of your time because the days are evil. Time. It's a tough one. We know that our lives are not our own. Time is not our own either. God lets us use it the way we want, but he'll call us to account for it. And gently remind us of our mission to offload self and reload outward, other-centred thinking and purposes according to his inspiring and providing. Time, it's our life that he's talking about. Make the most of your life because the days are evil. What is Paul being? Some pessimist? Some negative, dark thinker here? Because the days are evil? The forces of evil in the world are making it harder to be a Christian in some parts of the world and have been for many decades, some places for centuries. But here in the West, the land of freedom and opportunity, those days are numbered. The wisdom of God would have us be aware that the powers that are not flesh and blood, that they are not just sitting around, but increasingly active in ways that make bad seem good and good seem bad. The adversary is relentless. Paul says the days are evil, and where there is evil, there is no godliness. And where God is, evil is pushed out. Where God is in our life, evil is being pushed out. And he wants us to make the most of our time, the most of our lives. Our entire life is to pursue his purposes. And it's hard for us to yield everything about us. It's hard for us to give up all our time, all our heart, all our soul, all our will, and direct it to God's purposes. But that's what he calls us to do. That's the kind intention of his will, so that his purposes can be fulfilled in us who walk wisely, not unwisely. And the evil in the world will rob us of those special Kairos moments. Crowd out those thoughts that are to be aligned with God. To really be those opportunities, to really be the people that God called us to. Created to be people of light. And more we'll be seen in stark contrast to the world around us. But God doesn't want us to worry about evil, because he's taken care of it through Jesus on the cross. But he does call us to fight the same fight that Jesus fought, against the same evil that Jesus fought. In his day, evil was present in the selfishness of society, in the corruption of government, in the seeking of answers away from God. There was a corruption of the goodness of family, the way God intended, between a man and a woman. And all those things pervade life today in our modern world, only they're far more insidious, far more stealthier, and far more deceptive than ever. The days of evil are marked by seeds of selfishness liberally sprinkled through all of society, in every place. And the evil in the world is plagued with greater stakes these days. Countries are plundered, governments toppled, our media misinforms, Mr. X covers truth, and a few lives lost along the way is no big deal, it's just collateral damage. We can go back to the first few chapters of our Bible and see a family that Moses writes about. Adam and Eve and their two sons. And we don't venture along that journey very far before we see a murder committed. That same selfishness, that same confrontation with evil. And here we are today, on a much grander stage. The same old evil being played out in new ways. And everyone's caught up in it. That's why we need to be wise and see things for what they are. Making the most of our time. In spite of the forces to the contrary that would deceive us, mislead us, misdirect us, make us waste our time on silly, purposeless things. Oops. Thanks, Phil. So then, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is the next phrase in Paul's passage. Do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. God's will for us is to be saved. Not just once for the future, but for the present, by being saved every day, by being set free from the deception of self-centeredness. Look out for the seeds that God plants in us. Buy into those opportunities that he presents. Invest in what he shows to be true treasure, something worth putting effort into, something worth spending our time on. Paul says, awake, sleeper. This was the church he was talking to. Awake. Don't be asleep. Be alive, not dead. His will is for us to inhabit the moments that he prepares for us, to engage in his purposes, to engage in his mission in this dark and desperate world. Take time to think on what his will is for us. Take time to listen for the words that he gives to us, that we can share with others. Those moments that we can engage in to encourage and to support. And we benefit too. We grow too as we interact with others, immersed in God's purposes. The body is strengthened. The body's ability to interact with Muralbark and beyond is strengthened and developed and matured. And we know how desperately they need what we've got to offer, what God's got to offer through us. Jesus had an ear for what the Father was doing, for what the Father's will was, where to be, what to say, what to do, when to go here, when to go there. Jesus lived the whole Kairos life. Every moment was a special opportunity to accomplish some purpose that the Father had set before him. He didn't have much time. We haven't got much time either. And the moments that he gives to us can be gone in a heartbeat if we don't seize them. There's nothing like the power of repetition. I'd like to read from Galatians 6 too. What a person plants, he will harvest. The person who plants selfishness, ignoring the needs of others, ignoring God, harvests a crop of weeds. All he'll have to show for his life is weeds. But the one who plants in response to God, letting God's Spirit do the growth work in him, harvests a crop of real, eternal life. Do we want a life of weeds? So let's not allow ourselves to get fatigued in doing good at the right time, at that Kairos moment. We will harvest a good crop if we don't give up or quit. Right now, therefore, every time we get the chance, let us work for the benefit of all, starting with the people in the community of faith.